This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues call held on the 28th of September, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Thank you. Hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes and recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our chair, Michael Fleming.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Today, we are continuing our discussion on the closed generics. Last week, we went over the two weeks ago, we went over the CC2 comments. And I'm pretty sure we finished them. I did not host that call. Jeff Newman was kind enough to do that in my somewhat absence. But at the same time, today I wanted to take time and go over kind of a recap of what we've talked about so far, and not to rehash any comments or any of what we've already talked about, but basically to see how we can kind of consolidate this and move forward, at least see if we can reach some kind of idea or have some kind of plan for how we can propose policy for this. First of all, I'd like to go ahead and go through our agenda. We've already done our welcome. But I will, as always, ask if anyone has an SOI update. Please go ahead and share with the group now. Hearing none. If you do have an SOI update, please feel free to go ahead and copy that into the chat. And I also ask, if you are not speaking, to please mute your microphone. Thank you. So today, what I have here is a bit of background information, basically what I've already said, what we've talked about, what is a closed generic, what we talked about in terms of the pros and cons a little bit. And just, I want to ask everyone if they can just hold their comments at least until I finish the slides. We have about only 8 slides here. I think today's conversation will be kind of concentrated on the meat of how we can move forward. So if we could just wait on those comments, then I'd very much appreciate that. So I think the slides are unsynced for everyone. Am I correct? Yes, okay. So I am right now on slide 3. Basically, a recap, what is a closed generic? So a closed generic is referred to in the community as a TLD string that is a generic term and is proposed to be operated by a participant exclusively for its own benefit. This is how it was described in the NGPC meeting on February 2nd, 2013. And generic string is also referred to in specification 11.3d as registry operator of a generic string. TLD may not impose eligibility criteria for registering names in the TLD that limit registrations exclusively to a single person or entity and or that person's or entity's affiliates as defined in section 2.9c of the registry agreement. Generic string means a string consisting of a word or term that denominates or describes a general class of goods, services, groups, organizations, or things, as opposed to distinguishing a specific brand of goods, services, groups, organizations, or things from those of others. Going to the next page. So why are we considering this? This question has been asked several times, but just make sure everyone's on the same page. The ICANN board in their structure as a new GTLD program committee, known as the NGPC, directed the GNSO on the 21st of June 2015 to address the GACS Category 2.2 safeguard advice. The NGPC requests that the GNSO specifically include the issues of exclusive registry access for generic strings, serving a public interest goal as part of the new policy work it is planning to initiate on subsequent rounds of the new GTLD program, and inform the board on a regular basis with regards to the progress on the issue. So, and it was also the determination of the working group to consider this matter in our working track two. So, a recap. What have we done up until now? Well, we've analyzed pros and cons, basically the pros being closed generic is an innovative business model, and cons such as basically saying that there are proposed harms to consumers and the public interest. These were raised in the public comments when ICANN asked for feedback on how to address closed generics. We've also invited special guests such as Michaela, Kathy, as well as Milton to come in and give their professional feedback in regards to allowing or not allowing closed generics. And we've also analyzed the feedback from CC2 comments about how to pursue policy development. I just finished slide 5 if you're following along. So on slide 6, we look at our key findings. First of all, there are several cases where a generic strain may actually operate in an exclusive manner. If a TLD does qualify as a dot-brand TLD, whereas defined in the specification 13, and they meet those requirements by having a trademark for the strain, then they may operate in an exclusive manner for the registry and or its affiliates. We have the examples of .food and .apple. Also, if a GTLD receives an exemption to the registry code of conduct by demonstrating that the implementation of the code of conduct isn't necessary to protect the public interest, then they are able to actually operate in an exclusive manner. .office and .play, I think, are very good examples of this. And there is another way, of course, that seems to be a bit controversial, but at the same time, it does seem effective. If a GTLD establishes certain registration criteria, such as a very high price or qualifications that seem almost impossible, in such a fashion that a result of new registrations being made would be rather limited, then the GTLD may be operating in a way that could be interpreted as exclusive. Yes, Michaela, but they actually don't qualify necessarily for the specification 13. My understanding. They applied for the exemption to the registry code of conduct. If I am wrong, then please by all means correct me, but I know that there are examples of those out there. These are just a few I grabbed before the call. So on my last slide, slide 7, before we move forward with policy, we need to address the several elements that have been talked about. In the NGPC's direction to the GNSO, we are to carry out policy work in regards to exclusive registry access for generic strains serving a public interest goal. So, in this finding actually shows us that the biggest controversial ones, or I think the ones that raise many comments, are not necessarily just generic strains themselves, but generic strains that would seem to be, that would perhaps cause harm to the public interest if they were to be operated in a closed or in an exclusive manner. The majority of comments and concerns about closed generics is that there is proposed harm to the public interest. No matter what your opinion is on closed generics right now, I think that we can agree that there are those out there that have concerns about it, and they have proposed what possible harms may come to the public interest. The interpretations of the public interest, however, isn't necessarily one definition of a public interest. The comments that were raised seem to address the public interest as registrars, registrants, business consumers, and everyday internet users. There are also several comments raised that closed generics violated ICANN's bylaws and its core values in terms of not promoting the registration of domain names. Also, those in support of allowing closed generics saw it as an opportunity for innovation, creativity, and also a way to protect the public interest. And also, we need to consider predictability as we move forward. Now, on the last page, I have laid out a few ideas, and this isn't necessarily something that I think we have consensus on, because we haven't even discussed this yet, but just merely embrace the idea a little bit, and let's see how we can kind of advance this talk, advance these ideas, and see if they will actually serve as kind of a layout or guidelines for how we can move forward. First of all, because there's not one definition for public interest, we should go back and we should make sure we document all cases where the public interest or users were mentioned so that we have clear understanding for who to refer to. Now, noting that there are already cases where closed generics are operating, one option is to consider allowing closed generics to operate in an exclusive manner that is not harmful to the public interest. Tying the aspect of predictability, we can also consider introducing new questions to the application that would perhaps provide better visibility. A few examples of questions are, is the string considered generic? Will the TLD be operated exclusively? Is there evidence of harm against the public interest? Are there any mitigation measures that could be introduced? And even further down the line, of course, further consideration for public interest objections, clarifying questions, and also dispute resolution procedure once a TLD is actually delegated would be necessary in order to make sure that those mitigations were effective and people could raise those disputes. So this is what I've laid out for us to consider for the path forward. I would like now to open the floor to individuals to comment and to basically provide feedback in regards to this. Jeff, you have the floor.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I want everyone to kind of understand a little bit more the detail you have in slide 6 to make sure we're all on the same page. The way it operates now, even though there is this rule against closed generics, what we do allow right now is that if you have a trademark in a term, any term, no matter what it is, if you have a trademark registration for a term and that is registered in a certain class of goods and services, then provided that you use that or an entity uses that TLD string in accordance with their description of goods and services as in the registration, then they can be, under Spec 13, an exclusive use TLD, period. Regardless of whether it has a generic connotation in another sense. Hence, Apple, Office, or United, you name it. If there's a trademark registration, we all need to understand, because it's been discussed back and forth, because everyone says, well, you can't trademark a generic term and, you know, all this other stuff. The rule right now is that you are allowed to have a closed TLD, an exclusive use TLD, so long as you have a registration, obviously prior to the date, subject to the other rules there, sure. But in essence, if you have a trademark registration that meets the filing date, then you can use that string as an exclusive use TLD so long as you use it in connection with the goods/services for which you have a trademark. I'm not sure. I just want to get that on record and to discuss that to make sure everyone is in agreement, not only with that is the way we operate today, but that is the way we understand it moving forward.
Thank you, Jeff. Does anyone else want to speak at the current time? Jim, I know you've asked a question about, okay, Greg, you've got your hand up. Please go ahead. I'll address Jim's question after you finish.
This is Greg Chatton for the record. And I guess I'm looking at slide 6. I have some trouble with the nomenclature. The statement, there are several cases where a generic string may operate in an exclusive manner. And it cites .apple. .apple is not a generic string for computers. phones and the like. It's an arbitrary string in that case. So I think we're kind of overusing the term generic to mean anything that means anything. So it's basically we're using it to mean anything other than fanciful or coined, made-up terms. So Vasumi Sieg, assuming it means nothing in any language, seems to be the only thing that in our, well, in the view of the world that's being used here, is the only thing that would not be quote-unquote generic. So I recognize that there's, so the, you know, the issue of a closed generic, I think it needs to be separated from the issue of a closed, arbitrary, or suggestive string. Closed generic implies that it's being used, or more implies it really needs to be defined as a string that is being used within the, if you will, the dictionary meaning of the term, say, makeup, for makeup. As far as I know, Apple's not selling apples on .apple, so calling that a generic string or a closed generic is incorrect and should not be classified as such. So I think we need to be clear about what a closed generic is and is not. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Greg. And I completely agree with you. The point, the idea for putting it here and kind of addressing it and saying that, yes, it is a generic term, but is to actually to separate them. There have been several things about, for example, .food that have been addressed, that have been raised in the past in our conversations. But to kind of put an end to this argument, or to that idea, I put this on here to just say, yes, in some cases it can be seen as a generic string, but because it's operating with a trademark and it does qualify and it is a distinguishable trademark within the brand and the services that it is intertwined with, that it is not a closed generic. And specification 11, for example, doesn't necessarily tie very closely in with specification 13. And that's why I'm also discussing that we need to perhaps propose some changes to language, or at least to see if we can't better tie those two together so that it doesn't, there can't be misconceptions. Whereas, for example, if somebody says, oh, well, .food, well, it is a trademark, so let's not go down that road. That has specification 13, different argument. Jeff, I'm supposing you want to respond to it. Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, I would kind of encourage Greg and others just ignore what it says on the slide, okay? Let's move beyond that. I think Kurt had made a suggestion that maybe we should call it dictionary words. Whatever we want to call it, I know trademark lawyers love, and then I'm one of them as well, we love to get caught up in, when a word like generic is used up there because it's got a specific meaning in trademark law. I encourage everyone to ignore that. The point that we're trying to get across is that any word, whether some might consider it to be a dictionary word or not, can be used as an exclusive use registry if it is being used in accordance with, best way to say, in accordance with the trademark registration, trademark registration goods and services description, right? That's allowed. We all need to be on the same page. Alexander Schubert had said in the chat that he doesn't like that because that may enable industry giants to snap it up, or that it prevents those that want to use it in a generic sense from using it. I want to just make sure that this group understands that this is the way it currently is. That's why .food to the Food Network got through as an exclusive use registry. That's why a couple others got through as an exclusive use registry. And then we'll go through the next point of even if something didn't get through as an exclusive use registry, are they de facto exclusive use registries because of the way that the rules were or were not written? And that's where we'll address things like MakeUp and a couple others where have been some recent articles about how the setting of strict regulations strict restrictions can de facto cause a TLD to be or pricing could cause a TLD to be de facto closed. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Michaela, you have your hand up as well. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hope you can hear me. Michaela, for the record. I'm not going to start trying to argue trademark law with a bunch of lawyers because that'll just make my head explode and I'll end up looking like an idiot. So I'm not going to do that. But I do want to have a look at this claim that some people have been making over the last while that by making certain decisions, you're rendering an open TLD closed, and I don't think that's really true. I mean, all registry operators have policies and processes which they apply to registration. As long as you meet those policies and follow the processes, you can register a domain name. Now, some of them, use that as a way of marketing the TLD. So if you look at the case in the gTLD space, you look at, for example, .bank, which is super-duper highly validated and has a bunch of other things associated with the registrations. So they're not just selling you a domain. They're also selling you a whole load of security features as well. Now, one could argue, if one really wanted to, that is closed. But I don't think that is true. I think that's just highly vetted, which is very, very different. But if you want to follow that kind of argument about, by putting certain policies and processes in place, you are effectively closing a TLD, and that therefore, by extension, that is inherently bad, then there would be hundreds of TLDs that would fall into that category. And I don't think that's what we're really discussing at all, and I don't think it's particularly productive to try to put that twist on it. The pricing one again, same kind of thing. I mean, it's like saying that Lamborghini is exclusive because they're super expensive, but that's their marketing point. Of course, Lamborghinis are expensive. You wouldn't expect to get a Lamborghini for a couple of thousand euro. Thanks.
Michaela, thank you. I recognize that, and I do understand that. What I'm putting on here is I'm not trying to say what is and what basically is exact and whether I'm not trying to place a definition on here. I'm putting what has been interpreted, and that's why that last example for the several cases slide basically says could be interpreted. This isn't something that I'm trying to reopen up, and we are really we're really actually rehashing doing what I didn't want to do, but I think we've discussed enough up until this point where we can at least consider in some way, and we can at least recognize that there are proposed harms out there, that we can at least discuss if there could be a way to mitigate those while at the same time allowing the exclusive use or the exclusive operation of generic strings while at the same time having mitigation measures in there for strings that may pose harm or for some parties may see that it proposes harm to the public interest. Jeff, I'm going to let you go ahead, and then I would really like to see if we can't focus on the last slide to see if there are ways that we can move forward and look at predictability and some maybe objections or dispute resolution procedures for how we can mitigate these proposed harms. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I agree we need to get to talk about that, but I just want to distinguish with McKaylee when I use the word de facto closed. I'm not talking about the dot bank situation or any validated TLD, because they offer registrations to third parties, and they offer it to everyone on the same terms and conditions. When you have a case like dot makeup, and again, I'm not saying anything is right or wrong, I'm just pointing this out that you could have de facto ways to close your TLD. Again, whether that people like that or not, I'm not making a value judgment. What I'm saying, McKaylee, is that a TLD like dot makeup or any TLD that charges every third party the same amount and could some way charge itself that same amount for registration, that would be kind of, that would be the same rules for everyone. But someone like a dot makeup or any other party can basically say that for everyone, a registration is $10,000, except for the registry itself, right? Because the registry itself, even if it was $10,000, it'd be paying itself, and therefore it's essentially free to the registry. So that's what I'm saying in terms of a is very different by something like a dot makeup versus a validated TLD. And again, the reason I point that out is by saying there's no harm, or is there harm, we should discuss, is there harm to the public interest by allowing a TLD that has a term that could be used in, or that's used in its dictionary sense, but sets restrictions for every other party other than themselves, is there any public interest harm from that? And if there is, what is it? If there is not, then what makes that any different than a exclusive use TLD? I'm just calling it an exclusive use TLD to begin with. Then we can examine if there are harms, how we can mitigate those. That's what we're trying to get to. Thanks.
McKaylee, you have the floor.
Thanks. Okay, Jeff, thanks for clarifying. I fundamentally disagree with you, but thanks for the clarification anyway. I mean, the thing is this is, let's just take, so taking dot makeup, since that's the example you've given, whether or not the registry operator has better terms or not doesn't bother me in the least. The fact is that if I wanted to set up some kind of makeup brand or business or whatever, and I was willing to pay that little bit more for a super duper dot makeup, makeup domain, I could do so because I would be able to do so. Whereas in the case of a completely exclusive use TLD, which takes a generic, operates using a generic term, no matter how much money I have, I can't get a domain there, unless, of course, I buy the entire bloody brand and everything that goes with it, which obviously is completely impractical. But making it much harder or making it much more expensive or not offering exactly equivalent access doesn't render a TLD to be exclusive in the way that some of us have raised concerns about in the past. That it doesn't do that. If, for example, I can't think of a brand off the top of my head now which would be one to use as an example for something like that. But, I mean, the one that if you start talking about equal terms, equal treatment and things like that, then that opens up another massive can of worms, which would be what's actually happening with, say, vertically integrated entities. And I'm not sure that everybody really wants to get into that, because that could cause massive headaches for a lot of people. Thanks.
Thank you, McKaylee. So there's a lot of interesting discussion going on in the chat, but I'm not going to read from that because it would take way too much time. But can I then ask if we could perhaps look at slide 8 and kind of see if there are paths forward? So if we do look at slide 8, the first item on here I put on here basically says that we need to document all the all the cases of where the public interest is referred to and what those those proposed harms are. I don't want to go through all of them again this time around, of course, but that's something that I think we'll ask the staff to do. Could I get some feedback in regards to the idea of predictability? What would people here think about perhaps introducing questions into the application about whether or not a TLD is generic, if it intends to be operated exclusively, and if there is perhaps public interest that, if there's evidence of harm against the public interest, and what, of course, mitigation measures could be introduced. Gigi, you have your hand raised. I'll let you go.
Hi, Gigi Levine for the record. And as far as predictability goes, ICANN doesn't dictate business model in any other respect. So to take this one business model and say, well, no, you can't do that, doesn't seem consistent with the approach to kind of stand back and let registry operators run their business in a way as in a whatever way they choose to innovate or repeat what's been done before, as long as it is not causing any negative effects to the technical operation of the internet. And that's what it seems to underscore a lot of the decisions that are made for ICANN to get involved or not get involved in different issues. Does it negatively impact the technical operation of the internet? And if it doesn't, they tend to steer clear. So to do otherwise does seem to be inconsistent and does not support predictability, in my opinion.
Thank you, Gigi. Greg, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I agree with quite a bit of what was just said. I think there's a certain amount of logical inconsistency going on here. For instance, if people don't like the pricing of dot makeup, we can deal with that, but then we also have to deal with all the premium pricing across all of the domains. And ICANN has proven highly resistant to the idea of being a pricing regulator. And it's not like they priced .makeup at $1 million. I've seen plenty of so-called premium names, many of which are just ways to rip off trademark owners, marketed for far more than .makeup is marketing their top-level domain, their second-level domains at. So kind of like with the use of the public interest term, it's kind of people want to stop what they don't like. But the problem is that policy is a little bit more, needs to be a little bit more generic than that, so to speak. And you know, we can't look at this one instance and say we don't like it. And I'm also concerned with the use of the word public interest. While public interest is obviously terribly important, it's also used often as a voodoo term to ward off what you don't like and just say it's against the public interest. Without any understanding, it becomes like Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart saying he can't define pornography, but he knows it when he sees it. We're in the whole closed generic decision, to my mind, was rash and ill-considered. And I think that just saying that if we can kind of wave the wand of public interest, we're going to maintain this closed generic thought for another for perpetuity, just to my mind, doesn't work. So I think we have to be careful about kind of trying to, about using a closed universe of terms that ends up just kind of validating itself. And we need to be more thoughtful about how these principles relate to principles of how top-level domains are dealt with generally. Thanks.
Greg? So I'm going to – can I ask a question counter to what you said? Can I just ask a question to you as well? So in that sense, would you not be for example having questions basically application that would say, well, is it against the public interest? Because I mean, if we're trying to throw out the entire term of public interest in this, then I think we're still going to be at back where we started. But at the same time, if we don't want to bring that question of predictability into it, then how can we kind of come to a path forward?
To answer that, and this is Greg again, first off, I don't think you could ask any registry whether what they're doing is against the public interest. That's kind of asking, whether they beat their dog. There's just no, right way to answer that. Plus, we don't know what the public interest is, do we? So I think if we want to have predictability, one way to go about it is what was suggested, which is just allow domains to go to where they're generic to be operated, or where they're a dictionary term, or whatever it may be, or even not a dictionary term, to be operated as the winning bidder sees fit, as long as it doesn't violate the law. And there's no law that's violated. If .makeup were truly a closed generic and was not selling domains for any price, that doesn't violate the law. There are TLDs that would violate or could violate the law. That's a different question. But here, this is solely a policy or really market regulatory standard that's decided that this particular approach is not innovation of the type that ICANN wishes to allow. And that's a problem.
Thank you, Greg. So if we were, for example, to let them go forward, of course, and what about the idea of having some kind of objection procedure in there? Again, that does, of course, bring up, again, the public interest. But I don't think we can necessarily completely throw that out of the window, because that was an issue that was raised by the GAC, and it was one that was raised by many parties, and it's not going to go away just because we say, hey, let's go ahead with closed generics and not even try to regulate that. I'm sorry, not going to use the word regulate, but let's not even try to address whether or not there's a problem. Michele, go ahead.
Thanks. Michele, for the record again. I think one of the issues around objection procedures within the ICANN space, which we saw in the first round, was that unless you had super deep pockets, there was no way for you to access them, because I mean the costs involved were gigantic, and there wasn't a huge amount of clarity around whether the comments that people were submitting on the applications after the quote unquote big reveal, how they were going to be handled. So it was only when this particular issue and some other ones started drawing attention from the GAC and from, large groups of people, that there was any kind of hope of the needle moving on them. So if there were to be some kind of objection process, which I don't think is a terrible idea, it would need to be something that is more accessible. I'm not saying, take a very, very detailed objection process that might cost thousands of dollars and make it so that it's available for everybody for $50. That's not what I'm suggesting. But what I'm suggesting is more along the lines that there be a more robust process where there's and a certain degree of transparency around how people are able to submit objections and comments to things and then for them to be to have actually processed and handled. A bit like, say, when the ICANN board responds to the GAC communique, or they provide a rationale for each part of their response. Not saying that necessarily be the template, but hopefully you understand what I'm getting at. Thank you.
Thank you, Michele. And of course, I'm not trying to say that we need to have a completely new objection procedure in this. I'm just trying to think of if there's ways to challenge for people that actually do, people that do feel that they are potentially receiving harm or being harmed by an application for a. Did I lose everyone? Can you hear me? I'm hearing beep, beep.
I'm looking for that. I can hear you, though.
Okay, thank you.
Can hear you.
Greg, did you want to go ahead? I think you unmuted yourself.
I would say that I heard you. I also see some people seem to be signed in multiple times. I was having a little instability with Adobe Connect. Maybe that's what's going on.
No, this call. All right. So I think, yes, just a way for people to challenge a future application it's an idea that allows us to go forward, but at the same time not, of course, throwing out those ideas of proposed harms. Would anyone like to respond to what Michele said? Oh, good. I've got two eager beavers. Oh, Michele, you go first, and then Greg.
Well, I'm not going to respond to myself, but thanks anyway. I assume that, Ben, one of the things I think that you did mention, which I think people need to remember is that, you know, this issue was addressed, although how it was addressed one can argue about, but it was addressed and there was GAC advice, plus there was, as you rightly said, a very large number of submissions and people who objected to what happened. So I think that, you know, we need to keep that in mind. I mean, obviously, Greg and others have issues with the very concept of this, but I think, you know, challenging something, be that or asking, I mean, I think it can have it both ways, both in terms of opposing an application and challenging the other way around, as in to get some exemption so that they can actually have it. I mean, you know, I think there's no reason why that can't be a two-way street.
Thanks, Michele. Greg, you've got your hand up too. Go ahead.
Greg Chatton, for the record. I think part of the issue is where do we stop? First, we do have a number of different objection processes already in place. If we were to add another one, we would have to figure out what criteria would suffice to make a successful objection. The GAC has, you know, been asked to put in rationales, but their only criteria is whether, in their view, it affects the public interest, and I think their view of that is fairly expansive. It expands to include whatever they would like to object to at the time, perhaps. But if we're going to talk about whether business models need objections or innovation, regulation, whatever policies against them, you know, the closed generic model, you know, shouldn't stand alone. And I think we need to consider whether there are all types of other models that are troublesome too, and troublesome to somebody. Some might be troublesome to brand owners, and some might be troublesome to people who use the Bible but aren't, you know, they use a document they call the Bible, but they're not Christians, and therefore can't register in .Bible. There are all sorts of possibilities about, you know, trying it under the hood of these of these business models. My concern is that while I would like the option to go after some, there are probably others that I would not like the option if we get a, if we create something that basically allows everyone to go after closed generics. Why are we picking only on the closed generic model and not another number of other models? You know, given that aside from the wand waving about the public interest, we haven't figured out why it's a bad thing, and you know, particularly what, who would be harmed and how we would mount anything. So I'm concerned that we shouldn't look at closed generics in a vacuum, but rather as, you know, one of a number of possible ways that domains, top-level domains, can be run in ways that some people don't like. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg, and that's very good feedback. I just want to, before I pass the floor to, pass the mic to Jeff, I do want to just mention and kind of bring back everyone's, if we look at the, if we remember the old, the previous application, I think majority of where the, first of all, the GAC advice and then the comments came about were actually in regards to what was listed in question 18, the purpose for the TLD. I think a lot of the way those were responded to kind of outlined whether or not the TLD intended to be exclusive. And in that sense, I also think that perhaps we can also reapproach the question idea, whether or not the TLD will be considered, will be operated exclusively. I think that's when we can kind of go back to. But, Jeff, you've got the floor. I'll let you go ahead and speak.
Yeah, thanks. And Mike's comment, Mike Rodabaugh just made a comment saying, before we consider an objection process, don't we need to agree on some substantive basis to object? And sort of where I'm going with my personal comments. Like, we need to, if there is an objection process, we need to focus on the harms and what harms we seek to protect. McKaylee was very right, saying there were a lot of letters that were submitted in opposition to closed generics. A lot of those letters, though, came from registrants who claimed that there was a harm because they couldn't register a name. There were complaints by competitors of those that applied to the string for competition concerns. What personally, I believe that we should not be looking at competition or harm to competitors because that's dealt with under the law. And if there's a competition concern, those need to be addressed through the appropriate competition authority. And competition authorities can't make assessments until after a practice actually happens, not to prevent a certain practice. I think if we're talking about harm to registrants because they can't register a name, I think we need to take a step back and think, is that really what we as a community need to protect? Is it really the need to protect someone's ability to register names? I'm not sure it necessarily is. I think if that's what we're going after, then we're not able to encourage other types of models of TLDs that don't rely on providing registrations to third parties. I think at the end of the day, it's to really look at harms to end users. What harms could there be to end users because a TLD is closed? And if we focus on that and try to come up with the things we want to protect the global community from, then perhaps we can think about an objection based on those harms to end users. So I think we should start there from a guide because I think we all come from different places. And those comments all came from different places alleging very different types of harms, some of which I think it's appropriate for ICANN to address, some of which personally I believe not appropriate for ICANN to address. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Greg, I'm going to assume that's an old hand. McKaylee, you have the floor.
Thanks, McKay, for the record. I have to disagree very strongly with Jeff. I really don't think that objections from competitors should be ignored. This is the entire thing. I mean, if the issue is that a generic term within this context describes an entire industry, it describes an entire vertical. If, for example, again, using the example of DotCloud, if a single company had taken DotCloud and closed that off, then that would arguably give them a competitive advantage. Saying that it's being dealt with at the level of the law, I disagree with, because competition authorities have a very little understanding about how domain names work. I mean, just kind of punting it over that way, I don't think actually solves anything. I think it would be a valid concern. I mean, the other thing as well is, I mean, if you look at, you know, terms such as harm, which, you know, are being bandied about a lot within the ICANN space. I mean, harm can be construed as many things. If people were to believe that the only possible place on the internet to buy a book was Amazon.com, then that could be perceived as being harm. Much in the same way, if you believe that the only supermarket was, you know, Tesco or something like that, that could be perceived as being harm. So, I mean, I don't really see how that's, you know, if you're going to theoretically allow there to be potentially closed off namespaces using generic terms, then you need to allow people and organizations, be they competitors or not, to voice their objections. I mean, to sit up and jump up and down and say we don't like it obviously isn't a particularly helpful objection. But if they're able to give clear, rational arguments as to why they want to object to something, then I think they should be allowed to do so.
Thank you, Michele. Jeff, did you want to respond to that, or if not?
It's a quick thing. Michele, you and I disagree on this one, obviously. I've never said competitor complaints should be ignored. What I'm saying is that ICANN is not the appropriate place to deal with competition law. And if we were to deal with competition law would tell you, and Greg could probably tell you as a recovering competition lawyer, competition law does not prejudge any practice as being anti-competitive. It can only look at things after the fact to see if it is acting in an anti-competitive manner and that people are, or that whoever's being harmed, and then take steps to address that. I think personally that by saying closed generics are by definition should be excluded, I think we are basically saying that the model of domain name registries now and forever shall always be selling third-party registrations to registrants, as opposed to any other use, unless you happen to have a trademark in a term and therefore can then have a closed registry. I think that I'm not sure that is something that we should be setting a policy that basically stifles certain types of models because we're afraid of theoretical harms that competition law could deal with if there were harms after the fact. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. And Greg, you do have the floor now. Go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. Yeah, I don't want to try to do a competition law primer 101, but without there are quite a number of different causes of action that come under competition, but there's still a pretty limited menu. I think, you know, we'd need to see a more clear definition of what competition law would be an issue. Gaining competitive advantage is not anti-competitive. I think that's, you know, if you're not absent using market power or absent collusion, there pretty much isn't a problem. If you have market power or monopoly power, then there are a lot of things you can't do. But I don't see that as an issue. The other issue, you know, is horizontal collusion, and issues there can arise because ICANN is a place where competitors get together. And therefore, if there's a collusive behavior, there can be an issue. One might also think, perhaps, that eliminating closed generics could also be seen as a form of a collusive behavior. So we have to look at things that, aside from unfair competition law, which is a whole separate area, I don't think that there's any area of competition law here. There's all sorts of ways to get competitive advantage, and some of them are, statutory, and some of them are just based on building a better mousetrap. So we have to be careful about what we view as competitive issues, because there's no guarantee of a level playing field. There's no guarantee of any kind of that certain things go beyond. The basic point, though, that I wanted to make, actually, was that any objection, whether it's from a competitor or not, has to be based on policy concerns and not on the fact that their ox is being gored or that they don't like it. These need to be kind of more widespread, policy concerns. I see the list of pros and cons, and some of them are in that fashion. So we can look at that. But I think the caution with competitive concerns is just that they don't want somebody else to get ahead, but that doesn't raise any legal issues, and even the policy issues in dealing with it that way are troublesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Does anyone else want to respond to Greg, or does anyone want to make any further comments in regards to competition? If not, I'd like to kind of move on to a different exercise and just want to make sure everyone knows today's call is for 90 minutes, and I want to, if you do have to go, then we'd love to keep you, but I can understand there are conflicts because of this longer meeting. So the next exercise I'd like to get into, and we've already started doing it, but we've kind of just started dissecting what these proposed harms are. We've been looking at whether or not these can serve as, for example, basis for an objection procedure or some way to challenge if a closed generic was to move forward. I want, if we can, and this is kind of rehashing, would anyone be opposed to going through these cons again and just discussing what is here and seeing if this is something that we really need to consider, or if there aren't actually, this is outside of what we need to consider. Would anybody be opposed to that? Does anyone think it's a good idea? Am I talking to myself? Oh, Michelle Gill, you've got your hand up. Go ahead.
Thanks. I think this list of pros and cons is based on input that was received in the past and input that was received recently. And it hasn't really moved. And I think everybody's already looked at it. And those of us who oppose them continue to oppose them. And those that are in favor of them are still in favor of them. So I'm not too sure if there's any real benefit to discussing them much further, because I'm not going to change somebody's mind who's in favor of closed generics, and no matter how persuasive and eloquent some people might be to try to kind of argue in favor of them, I'm not going to change my position. So I just don't And I think other people are in the same position. I mean, the positions we've held have not changed, is what I'm trying to say.
Thanks, Michele. So then I'm going to ask a counter question. So do we need to take all of these comments here and document them as legit proposed harms and make sure that, for example, a procedure that could challenge closed generics to say if they were to go forward in procedures, that anyone could challenge a closed generic based upon anything that's written in here? Avery, what's the middle space? I hear transformer voice. Offer, did you want to speak? That we can just include the, well, Avery's trying to chime in. I don't think there is, I don't think we can consider all of these in here as, what's the word I want to use, harms that could be, that we could challenge closed generics on if they were to go forward. We need to have an agreed upon, or at least a somewhat sensible list of harms that are seen as, that are deemed as something that could actually, that we, someone would need to challenge, the closed generics on. And Greg, you've got your hand up, and if Avery is connected, then I'll let her go right after you.
Thanks. I think that we have to consider both harms and benefits in analyzing any closed generic, or in analyzing, if we're going to get into the business of analyzing business models, analyzing every other business model as well. So if we have, you know, business model court, then I think we need to, we just hold it open and then to all the pros and cons, and then see whether somebody likes them. Again, I kind of come back to the idea that, you know, because closed generics were picked out in the first round or the prior round, since there were other rounds before that, doesn't mean that we have to continue it. I think this is one of these things, especially given the tortured path by which the closed generic rule was came into being, assumption that we got it right the first time, since it wasn't even necessarily, quote-unquote, we, doesn't make sense. And I think we need to look at this kind of on a clear slate, ab initio, tabula rasa, and other, you know, great Latin phrases. So and on top of it, too, as Susan notes, some of these reasons are ludicrous. I think we may, in doing this again and trying to do it in a more planful manner, even if we look only at closed generics and not at other business models, and I think we need to justify why we're doing that. But even if we do, I think we need to come up with both, you know, reasons why it makes sense to block them or to limit them, and then there has to be both, you know, both a benefit analysis and a harm analysis that would be involved in anything here. Frankly, I think the whole thing is a rabbit hole, but because it was done in the prior round, or at least maybe we're already in the rabbit hole, and the question is how to get out. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg, and good feedback. Oliver, you have the floor. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Transformer Voice, also known as Avery. That was a very strange try. But anyhow, you asked me what I thought was a middle space, and as I said, I'm not completely positive. I'm not saying I have one. However, what we're looking at, first of all, is a rabbit hole that we're definitely stuck in, because while I would argue that there was a presumption that these things would be okay among the previous policymakers in the GNSO for the previous round, they didn't make a clear statement on it. We didn't make a clear statement on it. And so eventually someone else applied a policy where there had been none on the assumption that if there is no policy, you know, we're free to establish it. So that was a previous principle that's no longer. So I think it's a rabbit hole we're in. We have to. And yes, there are two strong holding sides, you know, the one that says never any closed generic and the one that says there's no problem with closed generic. Now, when we're having conversations about it, this is the reason I brought up, you know, when people brought up cloud and book, we have problems with it because of who is applying for it and the intended use. If the World Meteorological Society had applied for cloud to use it for meteorological, would it have been the same kind of problem? If the antique bookbinders of the world who want to preserve touchy-feely books that have good binding and smell nice had wanted the name for their society, what would have been the problem with that? Or would people have seen the same sort of problem with it is perhaps a question I would ask. So perhaps there is something in the model that's presented that makes it not the closed generic that's specifically bothering people, but some other aspect. So while I'm not trying to posit a compromise space, what I'm saying is, yes, we have two sharp sides in this rabbit warren battle. But is there a way of looking at this that basically can accommodate the public interests that some are claiming for preemptorily handling what might become an anti-competitive? And I think taking risk into account is a reasonable thing for us to do. None of these things are certain harms, but they have risk. And taking the notion that people should be open to models that are not anti-competitive, but still may be closed on a word that shows in a dictionary somewhere. So that's what I'm talking about in terms of a middle space. I do believe at the moment that we're stuck with a de facto policy and an imposed policy, and I really think it's important to see if we can come up with some sort of policy that makes sense to both sides, perhaps with a wee bit of compromise, not a dirty word, and that's what I was thinking. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. And I think that is where we're at right now. I think that's what I'm trying to look at here, about this middle ground, if we will. The NGPC itself said that it wasn't necessarily just generic strings. It was generic strings that posed a harm to the public interest. I don't know the exact words, and don't quote me on it, but let's not get into the nitty-gritty of that. It does down to the use and who is using it factor that Avery stated, and that is what we need to look at in order for us to move forward. Greg, you still have your hand up. I'm going to let you have the floor if you're looking to speak. Nope. Okay. Does anyone else have something that they want to add, or that they want to propose at this point. So the idea is that we do look at, as Greg stated, is of course look at the pros as well. But if we're considering the objection factor, that we look at the cons here, look at the proposed harms, and see if they're legit. The mic hasn't gone dead. Oh, Gigi, you've got your hand up. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Gigi Levine. I guess I'm confused. I mean, if someone objects to an application on the grounds that it is contrary to the public interest, shouldn't they have to demonstrate what those harms are? I mean, is it up to us to determine what's a harm and what's not? I would think it would be up to the objector to prove their point, and then for the evaluators to determine if it's valid or not? Or is there something in the process that I'm overlooking?
No, Gigi, you've got a good question. And I don't think we've laid out any rules or any criteria for objection at this point. And that's not what I'm trying to get into too much. We're trying to look at the challenge aspect and see if there's grounds that someone could challenge the closed generic on, legit ones at that. Jeff, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. I think Gigi's correct in the sense of the way I canned it was the opposite. So what happened was, from the best of my recollection, the GAC came out with its advice, and I can ask each party that applied for what it viewed or what the GAC viewed as a closed generic, not necessarily what was a closed generic or not, but what the GAC viewed at the time was a closed generic. I can ask each of those registries to come forward and demonstrate how granting them this exclusive registry would either be in the public interest or not harm the public interest.
We've lost you if you're still speaking.
Sorry. I accidentally hit mute. It either had to be in the public interest, is what ICANN was putting the burden on the applicant to show, so it was backwards. I think Gigi said it right in the way it should be going forward. It's that there should be a demonstration that the way in which the applicant intends to operate that TLD is against the public interest, I think is probably more appropriate, but ICANN didn't do it that way. It took the reverse approach. And how to argue that something is in the public interest is not, before it's even launched, is not something that's, I guess ICANN thought anyone was able to demonstrate, or they just didn't want to deal with it.
Thanks, Jeff. Greg, you have your hand up as well. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Greg Shatton, for the record. Yeah, I think that in thinking about this, it seems that, you know, the objection to the closed generics came more from a philosophical or a vision thing. It was perhaps a very a narrow vision, which is also why the prior round was not dot brand friendly either, which is a view that what the top level domains should be are marketplaces for second level domains. And I think Phil Buckingham actually kind of got me thinking about that. And the idea that somebody would want a top level domain for some other reason ran against the grain of that thinking. But I think that exposes kind of a lack of innovation in thinking, because that's, you know, by and large all that top level domains have been up till now, or up till a couple of years ago, were created marketplaces for second level domains. So it seems to me that that has nothing to do with the public interest, and that, you know, harms would need to be much more narrowly defined and meet a higher bar rather than just the idea that you're foreclosing a marketplace for second-level domains. I think some of the concerns kind of sounded like they were getting close to fraud or consumer deception. The idea, again, that if consumers only ever think about top-level domains as marketplaces or to define spaces for a multiplicity of owners of second-level domains, then and they get to a dot makeup, they're going to think they're looking at a generic. If somebody goes to i.makeup, they think they're going to be seeing a multiplicity of iMakeup providers. But that, again, is kind of old thinking. You know, whereas if we only dealt in old thinking, there would be no planes, no computers. The Patent Office head in, I think, 1906 suggested it be closed because all of the good inventions have already been thought up. That's not a joke. Thankfully, that wasn't the decision that was made. So the fact that top-level domains can operate in other fashions, to my mind, is something that just needs to be part of the fabric of thinking going forward. There's more than enough fish in the sea for second-level domain marketplaces or the market for second-level domains to continue to exist robustly across hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of top-level domains, but that doesn't have to be the favored model. And I don't think there's any public interest argument that that it should be the favored model. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. If I may, I'd like to ask a question myself, not as a not a personal question or anything like that, but to kind of engage response. Jeff, you've still got your hand up. I'll let you go first if you do want to say something, but I've got a question I want to ask on IP bylaws and whether or not closed generics actually does go against that, just to make sure we have responses on record.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff. To answer that last part, there's nothing in the bylaws that says anything about closed generics or whether it is or is not. I just want to, you know, we've been putting this in the chat, but I want to make it clear. Again, this is a personal hat. This is actually not, this is when I was at a former employer, though I'm not speaking for the former employer. But what happened, I want on the record, which was that ICANN had asked every registry to answer why it would be in the public interest to go forward as an exclusive use registry. All you'll see on the page that Trang has correctly cited is that 130 or whatever of them decided to withdraw their exclusive use or to open it up, essentially. That doesn't represent the picture of what happened. There have been months and months and months of delay, and there was no evaluation of anyone's response. ICANN never came back to anyone and said, those are some good arguments, or those are bad arguments, or you know, anything to that nature. It just kept holding it off. And eventually, ICANN sent the message indirectly, but maybe to some very directly, saying if you want to insist on staying a closed generic or a closed CLD, then you will not move forward in this round. At that point, again, this is a year or 2 years after the fact, most of the GTLDs changed their application to reflect that they, rather than losing their entire investment and all their lawyers' money and time and everything else, rather than do that, they decided to close or to open or agree to open their registries and sign a contract that said it would open their registries. Some of them, or a lot of them, have done nothing with their TLDs since because their owners or their sponsors lost interest. Others have gone forward and launched and have created restrictions for everyone but themselves to get around the exclusive use rules, and a few of them withdrew their applications completely. So I kind of want that on the record. I think it's really important because I just think that we need to change that model going forward, whatever we decide. And I think it's important that we do something on this issue other than just have the status quo. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. So I think we've reached, well, we're nearing the top of the hour, and I'm not sure how much more we can go down the rabbit hole today. But I do think that we've collected a lot of good feedback, and we're looking at, we're starting to look at the path forward a bit, I think. And that is a good advancement. Does anyone have anything else they'd like to add or to provide? If not, then I'm going to say thank you, and we will see you again next week. And we might continue this topic. I'm not sure yet. We're going to take it back to the leadership team and see where we progress from here and how we can further develop this before we move on to the next topic. But then again, once again, thank you. Oh, Jeff, you've got your hand raised. You have the last comment before I close.
Thank you. This is Jeff. I'm not sure it's the last comment. I want actually to look at what Trang has presented, because I'm not sure I understand those numbers. Trang has said there are 189 applications that were in the GAC Category 2. Of those, 139 indicated that they would not operate as exclusive access PLDs. 12 indicated that they would operate as exclusive TLDs. 35 indicated that their applications currently state that they will be operated as exclusive use, but the applicants will not operate them as exclusive use. So I would actually put those 35 in with the 139, because that's now 174 of them have reluctantly agreed to not operate as exclusive access. But Trang, what happened with the 12 that indicated that they'll be operated as exclusive use registries? I believe a lot of them ended up withdrawing completely. Did any of those go forward, of those that indicated they wanted to stay exclusive access registries? Did any of them sign contracts?
Hi, Jeff. This is Trang for the record. Yes, I provided the breakdown of those 12 on the last WorkTrack 2 call. I believe of the 12, all but 5 ended up withdrawing. One ended up signing a Spec 13, and the other 4 have, I believe, signed a registry agreement. And then those specific strings, I can't recall off the top of my head, but I know it's in the notes record from the last WorkTrack 2 call.
Thank you, Trang. Thank you, Jeff. Michaela, you had your hand up for a moment, but you dropped it, so I'm not going to get in there. No, sorry, not going to call on you if you're not wanting to speak. So, Jeff, did you want to take a minute to respond to that, or is there anyone else that would like to go forward?
Well, I think, sorry, this is Jeff. I just think the response to Trang is, well, thank you for the data, right? I forgot that was provided on the last one. But I think what it shows is that I can basically, so it forced one, it's signing a Spec 13 that had a trademark. I think that's .food, if my recollection is correct. I think the others either withdrew so essentially ICANN was sending the message by holding out that they did not want any exclusive access TLDs, regardless of whether that registry came forward and said it was in the public interest. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. Michaeli, you do have your hand raised. I am passing the floor to you.
Thanks, Michaeli, for the record and all that. Now, just very briefly, I think one thing that just we need to really be careful about is badly handling, screwing up, whatever term you want to use, a process shouldn't kind of taint us in the way that it's being characterized. I mean, I can made a lot of mistakes during the first round. ICANN has made many mistakes over the years, and unfortunately we'll probably continue to make mistakes for years to come. But we, you know, just because they handled stuff badly and you know, didn't respond in a timely fashion and all that kind of thing, that doesn't necessarily mean that what was put in place was broken. It's just the way that they handled it was broken.
Thank you, Michele. There is exactly 1 minute left for the scheduled time. If anyone would like to respond, please do. If not, then I will end the call. But Michele does make a good point. We need to make sure we look at, throw it completely out the window, just because of how it was processed by ICANN. I'm sorry, it's 1:30 here. I'm ready to call it quits tonight, guys. I'm sorry. Thank you for joining us. We will be having a meeting again next week. We'll send you an email with how we're going to progress for what topic we're going to talk about next week. Thank you very much for your time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone, for joining. Today's meeting's adjourned. You can disconnect all lines and have a great rest of your day.